This is H10, Hanshin Tigers English News, where Hanshin Tigers fans all around the world unite and catch up on the team Colonel Sanders has held captive since 1985. I'm your host, T-Ray. Today is March the 2nd, 2017, and this is episode 51. Welcome to the show. Well, as this is episode 51, we should talk a little bit about Hayata Ito, who is our current number 51. This is a guy who was a first-round draft pick several years ago and just has not panned out as of yet. He's still trying to find, you know, his swing. He's trying to find his game and make some kind of impact on the team, get some playing time in the outfield, but the outfield is getting crowded, as we will soon find out. How's T-Ray doing, and how was the offseason? It's been 5 months since our last episode. Well, as you all know, I think I announced this back in September, we have given birth to our second son. That's not a Hanshin Tigers English News son. It's actually myself and my wife. Thank you. Thanks for your congratulations. Life's going good. Our son is turning 6 months old very soon, and that means the house is noisier and fuller, and it is harder and harder to find space to record stuff and to get stuff done. But love life. You know, it's just a blessing to be alive, to be in Japan, to be so near Koshien, to have a loving family. I'm a happy man overall. So that's about it with me. How about you all? How are y'all doing? Hit me up with a note and let me know how you're doing. We are going to get into today's show. Before that, let me just say we've got an awesome interview once again with everybody's favorite number 9. Sorry, Shun Takayama, not you. Matt Merton. Stick around and we'll hit it up in a second.
Who's in that chair? Who's tea talking to? Who's in that chair? Maybe veteran, maybe two. Who's in that chair? Who's in that chair? Who's in the chair?
So, as I said, we have an interview with Matt Merton. I got to talk to him via Skype just yesterday, and it was great to hear his voice, great to talk to him. We talked for about a half hour before we hit the record button. I really feel like there's a bit of a friendship building there between myself and Matt, so that's pretty exciting for me. But have a listen to the interview, and we will get back to it right after that. Well, I'm here again, everybody, with Matt Merton. This is episode 51. He was just on episode 50, which seems like it was just yesterday, but it was a whole 5 months ago. Welcome back to the show, Matt.
Thanks a lot. Thanks for having me, Trevor.
Yeah, no problem, man. Hey, if you want to become a regular on the show, you know, it's two episodes in a row. You're welcome to join us every week.
It's fun, man. I enjoy it. We were just saying before we came on here, you know, obviously playing for the Tigers was a great honor. And, you know, the people, the fan support, the organization, I love the team. I want to see the team succeed. So getting able to connect with you and get on and have a chance to reach out to all the people who support and stuff, it's fun. So if we do this on a regular basis, it wouldn't be a bad thing.
Well, for sure. You know, when you get openings in your schedule, just let me know and we will definitely make some time to chat Tigers and just chat about what's going on with, speaking of Tigers, you are now part of the Detroit Tigers organization. Is that right?
That's correct. Yeah. I went through the off season preparing and, looking forward to another opportunity, and it kind of went down to the wire. We were kind of trying to figure out between a couple different organizations what might open up, and at the end of the day, it seemed like the best fit to further my career was with Detroit. So I went from one Tiger to another. So hopefully that's a good omen, and it will carry over into this season.
Yeah, absolutely. So tell me a little bit about your off season then. You know, how is this different from your typical off season?
Well, obviously going into, going back to when we last spoke in October, you know, the biggest thing is for the most part, up to last year, I had a pretty good understanding in the first 12 seasons I played in professional baseball of where it was I was going to be that following year. Mm-hmm. You know, so I think after the sixth year there with the Tigers, kind of knowing that was the end of the road going into it there, that coming up in that next year, I was going to be a quote unquote free agent for the first time in my career, you know? And what that means is just that you're training, you're preparing your body, you're doing everything that you've always done, but you're not so certain as to exactly where it is that you're going to be or what that even looks like. So you really got to have some faith You got to just trust and kind of go a day at a time and do what you're capable of doing. I know it's cliche, but all you can do is prepare your body and then kind of see what happens. So I would say probably it's funny because I was talking to the guys, and I would say for most ball players, you know, we get back in the gym, we get training and we get hitting and everything, but there's something about January 1st and when the new year comes around, there's that internal clock that says, hey, it's time to go. Like, this is what I've done for the last, you know, 14 years and I'm ready to go. I'm all dressed up. I was joking with the guys. I'm all dressed up and no place to go. So I would say probably the last three, four weeks prior to signing, I was getting a little bit anxious. I was getting a little bit, you know, probably stressed out about it because I had done everything on my part. My body felt good. You know, my swing felt great. And I was like, man, if I go through all this and then at the end of the day, there's really not the opportunity I'm looking for, it's going to be kind of frustrating. So, when it finally came down to the end and that opportunity came up and it looked like probably our best situation, it was just kind of a relief, to be honest with you, to be able to sign and get in camp and get in uniform.
Nice. So does this deal that you're in now, does it guarantee that you'll be playing in AAA or the majors, or is your spot in the organization undetermined? Like, how does that work?
Yeah, no, it's undetermined. So if you go back to December, actually, that's when our first conversation started with Detroit. At the time, everything was really positive. At that particular time in December, they actually, you know, barring something crazy happening, and as an athlete, we've talked about this, but it's our job to perform, and we have to go out and produce. And if we don't, then obviously things change. But back in December, it was pretty much going to get a chance to get every day at bats in AAA. But the one thing that was lacking there was the big league camp invite. And so, it was an interesting off season again. A lot of players, if you noticed, kind of signed late. There was a lot of guys still left, even in February. Mm-hmm. So we kind of waited because there were some really good conversations with some other teams. We were kind of waiting for a major league camp invite. And at the end of the day, that didn't really come to fruition. So we circled back with the Tigers maybe about 2 weeks ago. And all the same things that we talked about in December were still there. However, the biggest thing that had changed is they had signed a few more guys since then. So given that fact, obviously now you're in a situation where you're going to have to compete and kind of show what you still have left in the tank and then let that kind of sort itself out. So at this point, there is no guarantee as to exactly what that's going to look like.
I see. Okay. So where does the Detroit AAA team play? Pardon my ignorance. Is it Toledo?
No. Yeah, that's right. It's in Toledo. So okay. It's not far. It's nice. The Toledo-Detroit deal is pretty close, which is good for players because when you have families, if anything happens one way or the other, it makes it a lot easier logistically, you know. So
nice. Yeah. Now, I don't know if you know this, but Hanshin has some pretty strong connections with Detroit. You know, not only do they share the name Tigers, but a lot of the imports that have come to Hanshin have at one point in their careers played with Detroit. I don't know if you knew that.
That's really cool. And I know Cecil Fielder played there and became a star for the Detroit Tigers. So, it's cool. I love the history of the game. And, you know, Detroit, it's interesting because coming to this organization, what I realized for the first time is that it has a long standing history, and they're very, I don't know how you say it, but they are very true to their roots. And so it's been fun. It's just been cool to kind of be around and kind of see some of the history down the hallways and stuff. And much the same as it was there at Cochin and with the Tigers, Hanshin Tigers. So I'm looking forward to it. We'll kind of see what happens, but it's just one step along the way.
Nice. Well, you're coming off an organization that obviously has a very long history, and you know, right towards the end there, I think this happened after we talked last time, but they won that World Series. So, you know, maybe Matt Mertin is the missing piece, and maybe Detroit's going to have a good year this year.
It's very possible. I'd like to think that. I don't think there was a whole lot. It didn't have a whole lot to do with them winning that World Series last year, obviously. But I was happy for the city, for the organization. Having been a part of that organization and playing in Chicago, the fan base, obviously, you know, they deserved it. And Gio Epstein, one of the bright minds in baseball, You know, I was fortunate enough to be drafted by him back in 2003, and to see him come over there and to kind of take that thing and tear it apart and build it back up, and for them to see that whole thing come to fruition was cool. So it was nice to be able to get a chance to, you know, spend some time with some of those guys, try to invest into them a little bit, like we talked about. Some of those guys were able to make it to the big leagues and actually had a big part throughout the playoff run. So see those guys succeed, it was a lot of fun to watch.
There you go, man. So even if you weren't actually in the series, you know, you were a part of the lives of the guys that were in it. So that's really cool, man. That's got to be pretty exciting.
It was. And anything, like you said, you know, you just kind of, you kind of go through it and you try to do the best you can to be a good teammate and love on people and try to invest in them any way you can. And that's a two-way street. So they did a lot for me too, you know, coming back to the U.S. and leaving the great environment that I was in terms of fan support and stuff, and going to AAA baseball, to be honest with you, it's not the easiest. It kind of feels like you're in spring training every day. So to be able to be around those group of guys and to see their positive attitude towards the game and how hard they played and the things that they were working toward, and to see that come, that was encouraging for me. It made it a lot easier for me to be there. So it goes both ways.
Nice. Let's go back to your off season a little bit. And I know you're talking about doing your workouts and all that stuff and maybe not knowing where you're going to be in the spring, but you probably have a fairly, how can I say, like, set routine as far as your off season goes, or what, you know, how your training pattern or training schedule works. Are there things that have gotten easier over the years where you're a lot more comfortable with how your workouts go? And are there things that have gotten harder as you've kind of gotten up there in age?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of both, man. You know, I've always been, there's a lot of guys that work hard. And so it's not like I'm the exception to the rule that way, but I've always prided myself in working hard, taking care of my body. And I would say on average, man, when I was over there playing, I'd get home, except for 14, which was a fun year. You know, I'd get home sometime in mid-October, and I'd say by the beginning of November, I was back in the gym and I was going to it. So I didn't take a whole lot of time off. Where as I've this past year, for the first time, I was done in September. It was the first September I'd been off in a while. We may have spoken about that last time. Mm-hmm. I actually took some time, man, and I didn't jump right back into it 2 weeks later like I usually do. I just felt like my body had gotten to a point where it needed a little bit of a break. So I stayed active. I kept, you know, going stretching, doing my core exercises and stuff. But in terms of like being real, you know, working out really hard in the gym and taking a lot of swings, that wasn't something that I did right off the bat. So I gave my body a little bit more time this year because of September not playing. So I would say it wasn't until November, beginning of November, so I got 2 months this year, that I really got back after it on a day-to-day basis. So that was good. That was different. I think more than anything for me this winter, I was real – what was nice about last year was coming off of 2015 there in Japan, there was definitely some things in my swing that had broken down over the course of that year. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't swinging the bat the way that I had become accustomed to swinging it. And so 2016 was a year throughout the off season and spring training and everything else. I was really just trying to find myself again and get back to where I needed to be. And at the end of last season, maybe it was right before I'd gone on the DL for running into the wall. It kind of came back and it clicked a little bit. I started getting some of that separation with my hands again, and I started getting that same circular pattern with my hands that I had in 13 and then carried into 14. And I started feeling better about how my lower half was working and stuff. So this off season was nice because I was able to carry that right into the off season. I kind of had a really good feel for where I wanted to be. And so from a hitting perspective, I was a lot more comfortable, relaxed. So I think as you get older, the one thing is you put in so many swings and so much time that doesn't need to necessarily be the case anymore. You've got to kind of be smart with your body and you got to save some bullets, if you will. So it becomes a balancing act, you know, you got to work more efficiently. So there's certain things I think that get easier because you better understand yourself, but obviously your body the biggest thing with your body is its ability to withstand high repetitions and recovery. Your strength may still be really good. You may still be able to run well. You might have the explosiveness you need, but you got to know when to back off. So I think that in the off season, I go through all that to say that I think it's a balancing act, and there's certainly things, like I said, whether it's your swing or different things that you're a lot more comfortable with, makes it easier, kind of know what you need to do. And then the biggest challenge is continuing to push your body as you age. You know, that's the biggest thing.
Sounds very familiar. It almost sounds like Toritani's situation, just to add a year onto it. Like, you know, hardworking guy who's, you know, excelled at the game and all of a sudden has a bit of an off year. Like you say you did a bit in 2015, and, you know, Tori had his off year last year. And, as you know, he lost his starting position. And in fact, I read this morning that Kanemoto has basically said, I'm going with Hojo in the spring, you know, when the season starts. So, you know, do you have any kind of analysis or any kind of advice or anything like that for Toritani as he's kind of going through stuff that you might have gone through a year prior?
I think more than anything, I mean, look, you know, he has been extremely successful. And, like I said, sometimes some of your greatest attributes are some of your, you know, toughest, you know, your biggest weaknesses, in the sense that this guy went and played every single day. And it didn't matter if he was hurt or he wasn't hurt. He was going to be on the field and he was going to play. And that takes a toll. You know, over the years, that starts to take a toll. And I think more than anything, that's kind of where I was at when I came into this offseason, is I realized that, you know, after spending 6 years in Japan and coming back and really pushing my body last year to prepare myself to make a run at the big leagues again, and then coming up with that appendectomy, is that I was, in all sincerity, I was gassed. You know, I'd gotten to a point where I'd probably pushed too hard. And there's times where you have to back off. And I think, you know, this off season, I was able to do that. My body has been really, really, up to this point, knock on wood, really responsive. And I feel really good in camp. Look, the work never changes. I just think that it, in the sense that you're putting your time in. In fact, as you get older, I think you put more time in. Mm-hmm. It just has to change, you know. And for him, I mean, he knows the things he has to do to be successful. And, you know, look, there's years, whether you're 34, 35 years old, or you're 25, there's just years where you don't perform. I mean, baseball is an extremely difficult sport. And the reality is that, you know, it's not going to always go your way. And, you know, I often talk to hitters, and I, you know, opportunity being here in camp right now, I talk to hitters and I'm like, guys, I was like, what separates a 300 hitter from a 260 hitter? And they kind of look at me. I said, it's four hits. That's it. Every 100 at bat, it's four hits. You typically get 100 at bats if you're an everyday player. You typically get 100 at bats in a month. So what does that come? That comes down to one hit a week. Wow. So there's a very thin line between success and failure. And for you to be a 300 hitter, you separate yourself significantly. And there's a huge difference between 300 and 260. There's a huge difference between 280 and, you know, 230. I mean, that is a huge difference. But in all reality, what is it? It's a hit and a half per week. You know, so, yeah. You know, there's going to be years that don't necessarily go your way. And the hard thing is as you get older, you know, people start to wonder, well, is it because he's gotten too old, or maybe he's not able to do this anymore, or whatever it is. I just think that only you know yourself. He's got to be true to himself. He knows where he's at, how he feels physically. Mm-hmm. And, you know, with some of the, you know, there's the reality that we start to get to a point where maybe physically we're not capable of doing the same exact things we did at 28, but dang, we can be pretty close to it. Mm-hmm. And now we have to use the knowledge of the game that we have and the experience we have and be able to couple that to be the player to be successful in different ways. So, you know, I don't think there's any doubt that Toritani has the ability to still succeed and to succeed at a high level. I think he needs to be in a position to have opportunity like any other player does. And, you know, And that's really it. I mean, more than anything, I think it's a matter of being true to yourself and being able to make adjustments. And so sometimes making adjustments is learning how to back off or learning how to change up your training regimen that maybe worked when you were in your late 20s, but now into your mid 30s, it's not going to work the same way. So I think more than anything, it's the last thing I would say is in regards to the training is I always joked with the guys that, you know, we're always working on the engine, how strong we can be, how fast we can be. And as you get older, you need to start working on that suspension a little bit more. You know, you need to change the oil a little bit. Like the engine is what it is. You better start working on the other stuff to keep you out there and on the field. So that's it, man.
Right. Well, another guy that, as we know, has an impressive streak of longevity and is now the manager of the Hanshin Tigers, and that is Kanemoto. Toritani, actually, if he plays at all in the first 15 games of this season, will surpass him for second on the all-time Ironman list in NPB. Pretty impressive stuff.
Oh, extremely impressive. And there's a perfect example of a guy who he can go to, hopefully, and be able to talk to him about what it takes at this point in your career to be able to stay out there. Because Kanemoto is an example. Kanemoto-san is an example of that. I mean, when I first signed with the Tigers in 10, you know, there the couple of years, I mean, his shoulder was, or, you know, I can't quite recall if it was shoulder or elbow, but it was tough for him to go out there and throw.
Yeah, the shoulder.
But he
yeah.
found a way to be out there, and he was able to work through it. And I think, if anything, hopefully Kanemoto-san will have a little bit of, I would say sympathy, because at the end of the day, this is a game of production, and he has to produce to allow his team to win. But a little bit of an understanding for where Toritani is at in his career, and hopefully it'll be a good sounding board for Toritani to be able to, you know, work through this part of his career.
Absolutely. And, you know, as we kind of talked about a little bit before we pressed the record button here, you know, just hopefully there's not that idea of, you know, like you said, there's a balance between, you know, the production versus actually believing in a player and continuing to give him that chance to prove himself. And, you know, Toritani is at an age where he's already proven himself. And so maybe he needs a little bit of a longer leash, although he got a pretty long leash last season. But,
yeah. No, 100%. I mean, look, you know, there's guys, if you go back and you look at it, maybe we've talked about this, but David Ortiz, I think a few years back, had years where they thought he was done and maybe he didn't do so well or whatever. And last year, the last year of his career at 40, whatever years old he was, he produced close to MVP numbers. So
yeah.
I don't always think that, like, look, the reality is that maybe it is, maybe it isn't. And that's kind of where there's that uncertainty. The other thing I think you'll see too is that when you have players who have excelled at such a high level, okay, when they come off of that high level or that mountaintop, mm-hmm. people start to take notice. And so, like, Jose Bautista with the Toronto Blue Jays is the perfect example of that. This guy was hitting 40 home runs a year. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden last year, he didn't do that. Now, he had some stuff, you know, whatever. He was 35 years old. But he still hit 20-something home runs.
Yeah.
You know, so, like, look, these guys can still be productive at that age. It's just, like, if the expectation is for them to be the best version of themselves and to be able to produce at the levels they did when they were in their prime, well, that might not be possible, but they can still be a very valuable asset to a team, and they can still be very successful at playing the game, you know?
Absolutely, yeah. So when you were teammates with Kanemoto, so he was in left, and then you played center, and did you play some right as well, or how did that work?
I was in center to start, and then I'm thinking about that outfield. Oh, man. We had a guy who essentially was a corner guy that was playing center. I could run all right, but, you know, and then Kanemoto-san was at the latter stage of his career, and Sakamoto was in right. So it was a lot. I mean, the first time I'd ever really been in center field since on a regular basis since college or high school. And you know, Coach Yan is very, you got that expansive outfield. So it was definitely a challenge playing center field there. But it was great to be able to play beside Kanemoto-san. Obviously a lot of respect for what he's been able to do throughout his career, and just to be able to be out there, and watch him go about his business on a regular basis was a lot of fun.
Did you see, something in his personality or in his game or anything like that, that kind of said, this guy's going to be a manager someday? Or, like, what was that like in the clubhouse and all that kind of stuff, just seeing him interact with the other guys?
Well, he had a presence about him. You know, he took a leadership. He had this leadership type of presence about him. You knew that he was to be respected. And I think more than anything, that's kind of what stands out. I mean, whenever you have a guy who's was able to play as long as he was, and obviously he was really successful, but what I really think is a characteristic that is very positive in regard to his ability to go manage is not necessarily all the numbers he put up, while that was obviously great, but it was his ability to take the field every single day. And today's day and age, I think that that's becoming a lost art, where if guys don't feel 100%, maybe they're not going to go out there. And so I think for him to have that mentality, it shows you, like, kind of deep down inside what he's made of. And so I think more than anything, obviously he possessed those leadership skills in the sense of his presence and how he carried himself. He's got a knowledge of the game from being around it for a long time. But the ability to fight and to never quit, I think that that's something that's deep down inside of him that's special, that not everybody has. And I think that that can take you a long way in life, no matter if it's managing or anything else for that matter. So it's not surprising to me that he's managing there in the NPB now.
Right. Last question. I don't know how much or how well you've been able to follow Hanshin in the offseason and even last year, but what do you think the prospects are for this season for Hanshin or – yeah, what's your gut feeling?
Well, obviously, you like I said earlier, like I wish the best. I mean, I hope that they get to a place where they don't only make it to a Central League championship, but they become perennial a team that's annually having putting themselves in a position to win. And I think that with them now working to build some of the foundation with some of the youth coming up, I think that if those guys can continue to excel, I think that it will lend itself to being able to repeat year in and year out sustained success. So, obviously, the little bit I've been able to follow it, I know they signed Itoy, who's a great player. Mm-hmm. It seems as if, with Tateyama, Itoy, and Fukudome-san, they're going to have to find a way to work that all out. If I'm not mistaken, I think first base is kind of one of those things where they're looking to kind of fill a hole and how that's going to work itself out. There's battles, I know, going around the infield and, mm-hmm. and whatnot. But, more than anything, I think, especially playing at Koshien Stadium, I think that that it really comes down to your starting pitching and your bullpen and your ability to play defense. I think that, playing in that ballpark, I think it can tend to be low scoring when you're playing in that yard. Mm-hmm. So the ability of the starting pitching, the depth of the starting pitching and the bullpen, I think, is key. So, look, what are their prospects for the year? Everybody wants to believe at this time of year that they have a chance to win. That's the way it's supposed to be. I haven't been able to follow it close enough to know all the improvements or where the other teams are at, but I mean, the Tigers should definitely be one of those teams that year in and year out, with their resources, with their fan base, with the amount of financial resources they have and everything else, they should be able to put themselves in a position to compete year in and year out. So that's what you want to ultimately see them do. I know last year was a little bit of a step backwards after being in the playoffs for, three consecutive years. Last year that didn't work out, but we just talked about it. With the Chicago Cubs and what CO FC was able to do there. And so hopefully the Tigers, that's kind of the same path they're on, that they kind of broke it down a little bit, let some of the young guys play, and hopefully this year they'll be able to take that next step forward and continue to move forward in that manner to put the team in contention again.
For sure. Well, hey, Matt, I appreciate your time, and I've just run out of time as my family has stepped into the room. My son is awake and ready to spend some time with Daddy. So thank you so much, though, again, and we wish you all the best this year with the Detroit Tigers. And Ganbari mashou.
Ganbari mashou. Tell the family I said hi, man. I enjoyed it.
Absolutely will do. Okay, buddy. God bless you. Well. And we'll catch you again next time.
All right, bud. See you.
All right. Today. Bye-bye. Now, along with the theme of Matt Merton, you know, when he left the team at the end of 2015, he actually sent me a package with some kind of little presents in it. I got an autographed practice jersey. I got something called the Baseball Bible, which is a book, a Japanese book with Christian testimonies of some of the players that are in NPB or were in NPB who have come to faith. And they kind of share their story with the Japanese people. Anyways, that stuff I'm keeping for myself, but I do have some of Matt Merton's trademark wristbands, the kind of rubber wristbands that he designed every year. I've got a couple of those left, and I want to give them away. So I've got two that I will give away, and I have some questions for you that you need to answer in order to earn them. So the first question is, against what team did Matt Merton get his 1,000th career NPB hit? Little hint, if you want the answer, you have to go to the H10 website, which, if you don't know where it is, I'll tell you later. But you can find it there if you look under Matt Merton's profile. Oops, just gave it away to whoever is the fastest, right? And the second question is, against which current Hanshin Tiger did Matt Merton get his first MLB hit? Yes, he got his first MLB hit against a current Hanshin Tiger. If you don't know the answer, or if you want to know for sure what the answer is, go back and listen to episode 50 of the podcast, because we talked about it on that show. All right. Maybe it was his second MLB hit. So forgive me if I'm wrong. Okay. We are going to talk news, off-season news. As I said, it's been 5 months since our last episode. 5 months is a long off-season for Hanshin because we didn't make the playoffs last year. And so the season ended on October the 1st. And so it's been a nice long 5 months. So let's get to it right away. What is the news from this past off-season? First, we're going to look at players who got chopped, got axed, or got asked to leave. Kind of asked, you know, the brother in me is coming out. Don't hate. Okay, so here we go. From the 2016 roster, and this is in no particular order, here are the guys that have found greener pastures, or maybe not so green. Catcher Kazunari Tsuruoka has retired after 21 years in baseball. So he's gone. Takashi Shimizu, also catcher, he was cut. He got very little top squad playing time, and so he is out of here. Mauro Gomez, he got his pink slip. He is not with the team. He was supposed to sign potentially with the Cibolote Marines. That did not pan out for him. Then there was rumors that he was going to sign with a Korean baseball team, but apparently he did not pass his medical, or he didn't take the medical, and so they could not sign him. So I'm not sure what he's up to, but he certainly isn't with us anymore. Certainly. Naoto Nishida, who? Exactly. He was cut, but then he was re-signed as a development player. So he'll be wearing number 133 this year instead of 33. Katsuhiko Saka, after 13 years of pro ball, I think most of which was with Hanshin, he's gone as well. Matt Haig wasn't really given a full chance, and we don't know exactly why or the full reasoning, but he is also gone. He has signed a minor league deal with the Minnesota Twins, so we wish you all the best. Matt Haig, if you're out there, we still love you and we're still cheering for you. Kohei Shibata, outfielder, he was also cut, and he went to the tryouts, all NPB tryouts for players that got cut from all 12 teams. And he actually passed. He signed with the Cibolote Marines, and so he will be in their outfield, either on the farm or on the big squad during 2017. So good for you, Shibata, but see you later. Oh, let's see. Who else have we got that is gone? Nelson Perez. He got all of, I think, 10 at-bats in on the top squad, and those were in 2015. He went 0-for-9 with a walk, but he just never really got the chance. And he hit well on the farm, but I guess he wasn't part of the future for Hanshin, so that's it for him. Oh, now we're moving into pitchers. Let's see who we got. Kazuya Tsutsui, he was a reliever. He was wearing number 20. He is gone, and he has become a scout for the team. So he's still employed by us. Shinobu Fukuhara, He retired after 18 years of professional baseball. A great career, a great man. He is now a farm pitching coach with the team, so he's also still employed with the team. Tatsuya Kojima, who? Exactly. He's gone. Let's see, who else have we got here that's gone? Naoto Tsuru. He is also out of here. I think he's still with the organization. I think he might be like a groundskeeper or something like that. He's on mop-up duty anyways. Kazuyuki Kaneda, not exactly dropped or cut or anything. We'll get to him in a little bit more detail later, but he's no longer a Hanshin Tiger either. Akira Iwamoto, he was a starting pitcher, relief pitcher, do your best to get playing time pitcher, and he is gone. He's cut. Kazuhito Futagami, also gone. He was cut as well. And then Cody Satterwhite was also sent packing after 1 year, but I think it was kind of understood when he signed that he was a one-year special or a half-year special. So I think he signed with the Baltimore Orioles organization. I was listening to a podcast that had a Satterwhite interview. So, yeah, good on him, and good luck to you, Cody. We miss you. Thanks for all your hard work with Hanshin, and come back and visit. It'd be great to see you. Finally, also cut was Rafael Dolis. He was sent packing in December because he had elbow issues, and the team just wasn't sure if he would be able to come back healthy at the time. You know, I think on December 2nd, teams have to finalize their protected lists, players that they intend on signing in 2017, and he was left off of that list. So that's that. Those are the guys that were cut. Those are the guys that retired, and so on and so forth. Let's move forward now and let's look at the 2016 draft, but it's players that are new to the team in 2017. All right, so the first round pick, let me just give you a little bit of a background on this. We were expected as a team to draft a pitcher with our first round pick. There were two really hot pitchers in the draft, really coveted pitchers, and their names were Seigi Tanaka and Chihaya Sasaki. And we were expected to go for one of those two guys, but we didn't. It was a big surprise. Actually, Seigi Tanaka ended up going to the SoftBank Hawks. There were five teams that tried to acquire him in the first round of the draft, and the SoftBank Hawks won the draw. So they got it, and then when the other teams had to pick their secondary, in fact, Sasaki was not chosen right away by anybody, but then as the backup pick, first round pick, for the teams that lost out on that lottery for Tanaka, Sasaki was on five ballots, and he ended up going to the Chiba Latte Marines. We instead went for a guy named Yusuke Oyama. Yusuke Oyama is an infielder. He plays mostly third base, and he was the cleanup hitter for the All Japan University team. Kanemoto saw our hitting as a much more urgent concern than our pitching. And so there you go. Oyama is with us. In our second round, we chose a kid named Taiki Ono. He is a pitcher. And actually, we'll get to this a bit later with our spring training talk, but he's a pretty good pitcher in his own respect. You know, he's maybe not at the same level as Tanaka or Sasaki. But again, you know, once you reach the pros, it's hard to say who's going to blossom, who's going to excel, and who's going to just kind of fizzle out. Ito Hayata. So that's that. Our next two picks, we went with high school pitchers. So we got a couple of 18-year-olds. In the third round, we got Hiroto Saiki. And he actually is a local Kobe boy. He went to Sumashofu High School in Kobe, and he was really excited to become a Hanshin Tiger. The next guy we got is also an 18-year-old pitcher named Masumi Hamachi. So he is also, not someone that's expected to play a lot in 2017, but certainly he is a future potential, anchor on the pitching staff. In round five, we took a guy out of the Industrial League, but actually he was teammates in university with Shun Takayama and Seishiro Sakamoto, who we drafted last year. His name is Kento Itohara. He's an infielder. And as we'll see a bit later, as we talk about spring training, he is really impressed. So he's got a decent bat. He's decent in the field. There must have been something wrong with him in his university days that he went undrafted. So he was playing with JX Eneos, and we drafted him out of there. In the sixth round, we picked up a kid named Shungo Fukunaga. He's a portly fella. Not too big. He's not like Okawari-kun or anything like that, but he's a big fella. He's a pitcher as well. Round seven, we got a catcher named Kenya Nagasaka, and he comes out of the same university as Kanemoto and Yano. Obviously, they came out of university a long time ago, but he comes from Tohoku Fukushi University. And then with our final pick in round eight, this is the most picks that we've had in ages, we got another pitcher, a really tall kid named Kosuke Fujitani. He was also playing in the industrial leagues with Panasonic, but he is just 21 years old. So he's got hopefully a good future ahead of him. He looks really good on the mound, but also, he's a rather unpolished gem. So that is the draft. And that's eight new guys that we brought in. Who else did we bring in? You might be asking yourself. Well, I'm glad you asked because I am about to answer that question for you. So, first of all, probably the most important or the biggest name that we picked up was a free agent named Yoshio Itoi. He came from the Oryx Buffaloes. Like how my voice did that there. He came from the Buffaloes, and he originally was from the Nippon Ham Fighters, and he was drafted as a pitcher, but he was converted to the outfield after a couple of years of unsuccessful farm time, and he has blossomed into a great fielder who has several Golden Gloves. I think the number is either 7 or 9. He also has a batting title, and last year at age 35, he also tied for the league lead in the Pacific League for stolen bases with 53. So pretty impressive. We don't expect him to steal 53 bases this coming season, but certainly he brings much needed speed to our team. He's got some great defense, which is something we also lacked a lot last year. And he's got decent pop. I mean, he's not going to hit, 30 home runs, but 20 is a possibility, probably unlikely, more like, somewhere between, I would say maybe 10 and 17, 18 home runs is what we can expect, which is still pretty good for Hanshin. So he's the big pick. And by the way, if you want to go back and read articles about him and his acquisition process, he was what's called a Class B free agent, which means that the Oryx Buffaloes are entitled to, I'm going to get this wrong, but it's something like 60% of his 2016 salary, as well as a compensation pick, an unprotected player from Hanshin. Now, Hanshin has got to protect, I think it's 27 players. Those are guys that Oryx could not possibly take, and there's a lot of strategy involved. Do you protect a guy like Ando, who's 39 years old? Then you're wasting a protection pick where you could protect a young potential superstar. But, if you don't protect Ando, then you're kind of disrespecting him, or, there is the chance that out of spite, the Buffaloes might take him or whatever. So I think it was really tough. But in the end, I really think we got off, pretty lucky. They ended up snagging Kazuyuki Kaneda, as I mentioned. This is a kid who, I think he's 26 years old, and he still has not really, found a place on the roster. So he didn't have a whole lot of innings pitched last season. He's not somebody that was going to be a future superstar. I mean, there was hopes that he could be a good long reliever or a good setup guy or whatever, but that's okay because I think we have more than enough guys there. So thankful that they ended up with Kazuyuki Kaneda. So who else did we pick up in the offseason? We also picked up one of SoftBank's reject pitchers. And I hate to call him that, but he was cut from SoftBank, and so we ended up taking him. His name is Akihiro Yanase. He is a 12-year veteran, and he's expected to just come in and fill in with some innings in relief, possibly mop-up mode or whatever, or he may end up on the farm, I'm not really sure, but he's just another pitching arm, and as they say, whoever they are, you can't have too much pitching. There's no such thing as too much pitching, so there you go. We got another Japanese pitcher there. Also, who else did we pick up? Let's go to our foreigners. We got an infielder named Eric Campbell. He is formerly a New York Met, and he's got some major league experience, mostly minor league experience. And he kind of, he fills what we would call the Matt Merton, Matt Haig slot. He's not a power hitter. He's not going to hit us 30 bombs or anything. He's not really replacing Gomez. He's not even a first baseman by trade. He's a third baseman. He can play first base. He actually can play second base as well. He can play outfield as well. From what I've heard, he's pretty solid on defense. From what I've heard, he's also not the best of batters. But also, I did read an article, I think it was on ESPN, that in 2015, he was one of the hardest hitting players in the majors. He just happened to have a really low average because his BABIP, batting average on balls in play, was rather low. But he hit the ball very hard. So I'm hoping for good things out of him. And I know a lot of people have already said, oh, you know, I don't think he's what we're hoping for. And he's going to be a bust just like some of the other players. But give him a chance, man. We just don't know. So welcome to the team, Eric Campbell. We are looking forward to possibly talking to you during the season. It would be really nice to be able to hook up with you. Who else did we get? We got a reliever named Roman Mendez. Roman Mendez is, he's from the Dominican Republic, and he played for the Boston Red Sox and the Texas Rangers. If I'm not mistaken, he got no major league playing time in 2016, but in 2015 and a bit before that, he did. He is just 26 years old. He'll be 27 this summer. So a young guy. He's got, apparently he can hit around 98, 99 on the radar gun. And he's looked really good in camp. So we're looking forward to having him on the squad as well. And so the Dominicans then are Roman Mendez, Marcos Mateo, who's coming back for his second year, and surprise, Rafael Dolis got re-signed. Just last week, it was made official. His elbow is in decent enough condition. And so I think we had one of our scouts or one of our team reps go down to the Dominican to see him pitch some bullpen. And then he came back to Japan and had a test on February the 22nd. He passed the test. And so there you have it. He's back with the team. He'll make 50 million yen for this season. And so we have three Dominican relievers. Plus, we've got Randy Messenger as a starter. And as you know, NPB law dictates that we can't have all four of those guys up on the top squad at one time. So one of them is going to be a farm boy. Or, you know, we could rotate them in and out depending on how they do. But that's how she goes as far as our new acquisitions. Next, let's look at some of the number changes just for those of you that are keeping track at home. And maybe you'll be wondering like, hey, who's number 00? I thought that was Shibata. Well, Hiroki Uemoto switched from number 4 to number 00. So when you see a double goose egg or double bagel or double takoyaki at second base this year, that's who it is. Also in the catching department, Shinji Komiyama, who? Exactly. He was wearing number 39. He has since switched over to number 59. So on the outside chance that you see a number 59 on the diamond, that's who it is. Eric Campbell, by the way, took number 29. And Roman Mendez took number 20. Tsuyoshi Nishioka also switched numbers. And he did this in part to accommodate for Yoshio Itoi, who took number 7. Nishioka will be wearing number 5. By the way, Nishioka is still out with the Achilles tendon issue. He is rehabbing hard and looking to come back to the team sometime in the summer, I'm assuming. But we don't know. There's been no date set for his return. I think the final jersey number change would be pitcher Takumi Akiyama, who was wearing number 27 until last season and will now wear number 46. One more, I forgot. Good old Kyuji Fujikawa was wearing number 18 just for last season. And those of you who remember his glory days, which hopefully will come back, but we don't count on it. He's back to wearing number 22, his old number. So don't look for number 18 Kyuji anymore. He ain't with us. Okay, back to number 22. That's it for the number changes. Finally, as far as the off-season news, I don't know, maybe less important or whatever, but marriages. You know, it's really interesting. A lot of the guys got married this off-season. I was pretty surprised. And I may miss a couple here, and I'm not going to give them to you in the order that they got married. I won't tell you marriage, wedding dates. I won't tell you which Japanese celebrity their wife looks like, because all the Japanese articles will tell you stuff like that. But I don't care. I'm just happy that these guys got hitched, and you know, I wish them all the best. So Haraguchi actually just announced his marriage yesterday, but he is married. He is the newest of the newlyweds on the team. Let's see, as we continue down the list, Taiga Egoshi got married in the off season. Good for him. Ryosuke Ogata also got married this offseason. Yuya Yokoyama got married this offseason, as did Tsuyoshi Ishizaki. And I think that might be it. But that's a pretty impressive number. So all these guys, hopefully, you know, having gotten married, will step it up a notch, turn it up a notch, and they will, you know, they're playing not just for themselves, they're playing for a family now. And so hopefully, you know, we'll see these guys more and more on the field, and they will excel at the game. All right. Next, let's talk about spring training. That's kind of the main topic for the rest of today's show. So spring training went down from February the 1st until the 28th. And as always, the top squad was in Okinawa, in Ginoza. And the second squad was in Kochi Prefecture, in Aki. And if you really want to catch up on the news, honestly, I would encourage you to look back on the website, www.thehanshintigers.com. And if you look on the front page, you'll see six reports. I did a report for each cool, and it's actually not a cool, but anyways, I did six reports on the spring training sessions, and so if you really want a lot of details, that's where I would look if I were you. You can hear about injuries, you can hear about which players hit home runs when, or how the exhibition games went, all that kind of stuff. Let me just do a quick rundown of some of the stuff that I heard about some of the players, whether through articles or through other people on Facebook or whatever. So I'm just going down the list that I've got here of all the players, so forgive me for the order once again. Ryutaro Umeno is part of the battle for catcher this year, of course, and the battle is between him, Sakamoto, Okazaki, and Haraguchi. And Umeno really, you know, he's kind of gone up and down. His stock has gone up and down for the past 3 years, honestly. And, you know, he had some good sessions during spring training. He had some not so good sessions, but, you know, he's shown it a little bit on defense. He's, you know, he threw down a couple of runners at second base. He hit the ball well at times, but I really think he still needs to find that swing that he had during his rookie season where he showed all sorts of potential. Yeah, the rest of the catchers, there's not a whole lot of news. You know, Okazaki, Haraguchi, Sakamoto, they're all doing their thing and hoping to get playing time at catch. Haraguchi, I suppose we could mention that he has done a bit of time at first base, and there is the potential to put him there because, as you know, we lost Gomez, and we don't really have a proper first baseman to replace Gomez. Personally, I don't like the idea of Haraguchi at first base, and I'll tell you why. If he plays first base, first of all, it's a position he's not fully familiar with, so we can't expect his defense to be top-notch. It may be average at best, I'm not really sure. But as far as hitting goes, if you compare him to other first basemen around the league, where does he stand? Maybe average. You know, he hit almost 300 last year, and he hit 11 home runs in not full-time play. You know, he missed like the whole first month of the season because he was a development player. But you know, even if he hits 15, even if he hits 20 bombs, I mean, that's still average at first base. So we've got an average first base hitter, and then who do we put at catcher? Well, if Umeno does well behind the plate, he could be there, and he might find a swing, he might not. But we could end up with a below average hitting catcher, like Okazaki, or even Sakamoto, who still needs some time to develop. On the other hand, if you put Haraguchi at catcher, yeah, maybe his defense is not top-notch, but it's probably adequate, and I know he's worked on it this offseason. So I say give him a chance at catcher. We've got an above-average hitting catcher, perhaps the best in the Central League. So elite hitting, an average defense, and you know his game calling and his defense are only going to improve, hopefully. I also think it's just too soon to give up on him at catcher. So, yeah, you know, they're trying him out at first, and I think maybe that's for lack of other options at first base, but we'll talk about that also in a little bit. Some other news. Yamato, he has said he wants to play nothing but infield, so he's gotten rid of his outfield gloves, or I don't know if he's gotten rid of them, but he's not using them. He wants to be an infielder. He's also trying to make the change to become a switch hitter, which to me is kind of laughable, and I know I refrain from mentioning this in an article that I wrote, but I'll mention it here on the podcast. I mean, when you're a bad hitter at your natural right-handed spot, what makes you think you're going to be any better from the left side of the plate? And they say, oh yeah, but it's, you know, so he can use his speed to get on base better. What speed? This guy has never really stolen a lot of bases. In fact, his base stealing percentage is sitting somewhere around 50% in the past two seasons, and he's turning 30 this year. So I don't know what kind of speed they're hoping to get out of him or what they're hoping he's going to do from the left side of the plate, but I don't expect a whole lot of anything. I say he's our best defensive replacement, and other than that, yeah, maybe pinch run him for a pitcher or for a, you know, a big guy late in the game when we need that extra speed. But other than that, sorry, man, we can't count on your bat no more, Yamato. Hojo, Fumiya Hojo, has been killing it during spring training. He has been hitting the ball really hard. He's hit a lot of home runs, not only in batting practice, but in exhibition games. And I know it doesn't always translate to, you know, to real play, but Kanemoto has already made the statement. He's told Toritani, look, I'm using Hojo at shortstop to start the season unless, you know, something really drastic happens. And so Toritani really needs to start to think about his other options, whether that means third base and, you know, squeezing Campbell, you know, pushing Campbell over to first, or second base and, you know, heating up the battle there between Uemoto and Araki and Nishioka and Yamato, if I didn't mention him. Yeah, so Toritani is really going to have to look for playing time because it looks like Hojo is going to be the horse we ride at short. First round pick, Oyama, started spring training pretty bad as far as exhibition games and intra-squad games. But again, it doesn't mean a whole lot until we get to real game action. He started to find his swing a bit better towards the end of camp, so we're hoping that is going to translate into better stuff for the team down the road. Nishioka still rehabbing hard. Really encouraging to see him taking batting practice and running sprints and all that kind of stuff. And so hopefully, you know, that Achilles heel is going to, Achilles tendon, pardon me, is going to heal up perfectly and things will be great. Eric Campbell, had a stomach flu during camp. He also injured his wrist right at the end of camp, swinging through a pitch. Hopefully it was a minor thing. They say he's still going to stay with the first squad team and keep practicing there. So let's hope that that, continues in that way. The most impressive draft pick, other as far as the fielders go anyways, would be Kento Itohara, who has really impressed on the field, on the defense, on the base paths, as well as you know, at the plate. It really looks like this kid has got something special. At least, I'm wagering a guess, at least enough to earn a spot on the top squad for opening day. He may not be a starter, but he certainly, I think, has earned it. Unless they say they want to put him down on the farm to get a lot more, you know, plate appearances and playing time, which is entirely possible and also not unreasonable. Naomasa Yokawa was the star. He was the MVP of the second squad camp. And Kakefu, the second squad manager, the Nigun manager, really wants to turn him into the team's right-handed hitting slugger. And Yokawa is 25 years old. He'll be 26 this summer. So, you know, he's still got a decent amount of youth. And as we saw last year, he had a couple of big bashes during the season for the top squad. He led the Nigun second squad Western League in home runs and RBIs, despite coming up to the first squad a couple of times for stints. So, I mean, that's encouraging as well. And hopefully he will turn it up a notch and heat up the battle for third base, heat up the battle for, you know, he might play first base. You never know. Yoshio Itoi hurt himself a week before spring training opened. And so he was training on his own apart from the team the entire month. He says he's back to 80% and he is definitely, you know, gunning to be at 100% for the start of the season. Kanemoto's not rushing him. And he's basically said, hey, take as much time as you want. You know, create your own workout schedule, all that kind of stuff. You know, just come if you need help from us. But otherwise, you're on your own. And so there's full trust there. And hopefully Itoi will be back. He wants to play in some exhibition games. So, you know, there's a strong possibility he'll be playing a little bit in March before the season starts. Shun Takayama, hitting the ball hard, looks a lot stronger. His swing looks a lot sharper. So good stuff there. Shintaro Yokota, a couple weeks ago during camp, he suffered from migraines, returned from Okinawa to Osaka to have his head examined. Not a bad idea for a guy that's quite the airhead. But we got no news on him since then. I'm not sure. I don't know what's going on. Hopefully he's doing better. Masahiro Nakatani, he was a co-MVP at the Okinawa Spring Training alongside Fumiya Hojo and pitcher Takumi Akiyama. Good stuff there. I really hope that they convert him to first base. I mean, he started as a catcher when he was drafted and played outfield last year. But I say, hey, man, we need a first base. We need someone at first base. He's swinging the bat well. He's a slugger. Get him out there, man. Give him some playing time. Let him grow some more. Let's see. Who else can we talk about as far as news goes? Fujinami. He's looked a little bit better this spring. Certainly better than he did last season. But again, we're talking off-season. He has joined Samurai Japan. He is with the WBC team. And he pitched an inning last night against Chinese Taipei in an exhibition game. Walked the first guy on four straight pitches, then induced a ground out double play to the next guy, and then another ground out to end the inning. So I think he went eight pitches for one inning. I think, you know, half of his fans fainted out of disbelief that he had an eight pitch inning, but good for him. Maybe he's turned the corner. Maybe he's realized that, especially with pitch counts in the WBC, that the strikeout is not always the best way to get a guy out. So there you go. Hoping he does really well in the WBC, makes himself good and famous. And honestly, like, it's not that I don't want him to go to MLB. It would be sad to see him leave to go to the majors. But, I mean, it's nice to see Hanshin Tigers players do so well that the major leagues, you know, give them some of their attention. So that would be kind of cool. Roman Mendez, he looked great during spring training. He pitched very hard. Some of the batters that took batting practice from him said his pitches are really hard to read, and so that's really good. He's got a really smooth delivery. You know, he's also a very jovial, friendly guy, kind of like Dolis, and so it seems like, you know, we're going to have a lot of positive energy coming from the Dominican squad. Minoru Iwata, he looked really good at times, and he looked really bad at other times. This is a guy that was part of the starting rotation for a number of years until 2016 when everything fell apart. Hopefully, everything comes back together for him. Taiki Ono, second round pick, as I mentioned earlier. He's had a really good spring training. A lot of scouts, a lot of coaches, a lot of teammates have said, who is this kid? And, you know, he's got a 95 mile an hour fastball, throws the ball really well. His control isn't awesome yet, but it looks like he could be, again, it's the press quoting Kanemoto, and I don't know how much of a quote it is, but they said, you know, we've got a future super ace on our hands. I just hope he's a good pitcher. I hope he's a good part of the rotation for a number of years. So good on him. Marcos Mateo left spring training for a week to attend to some family issues in the Dominican Republic, but he has since come back. So nothing big to worry about there. As I mentioned earlier, Akiyama was one of the co-MVPs of the Okinawa spring training session. MVP just means like he stood out more than anybody else. You know, they're not going to give the MVP to guys like Fukudome because he's not appearing in a lot of action. You know, same with some of the pitchers like Nomi. You know, they're kind of just warming themselves up. They're veterans. They don't have to prove themselves. And so they, you know, they're kind of out of the running for MVP. But, you know, the young guys that are out there to prove themselves. And Akiyama, who is 25 years old, turning 26 next month, you know, it looks like he is vying for a position in the starting rotation, and he could get it. Same thing with Aoyagi. Obviously, Randy Messenger, you know, still just doing his thing, and, you know, he's stepped up his leadership. He just looks really comfortable and in control out there, so good on him. One final note as far as pitchers go, and that is Suguru Iwazaki, who has been a starter, kind of a spot starter. He's kind of been like the fifth or sixth guy in the rotation for the past couple of years since he joined the team in 2014. He is being converted to reliever, you know, kind of the left-handed reliever position. He could be the setup guy. They're talking new JFK. And for those of you that don't know JFK, check out my future article about the 2005 pennant winning team. It's scheduled to come out in a couple of weeks. Jeff Williams, Kyuji Fujikawa, and Tomoyuki Kubota, the 7th, 8th, and 9th inning relievers that shut down opponents. This coming year, we don't know exactly who it's going to be, but it could end up being something like a Mendez, Iwazaki, Mateo, MIM. I don't know. I don't know what acronym they're going to come up with, but hopefully we've got some good stuff on the horizon as far as our relief goes. So I think I've caught you up on as much of the news as is, you know, in my head right now. And again, if you want to find out more, you got to go to the website. So thank you once again for your time and passion for the Tigers. Hey, just a reminder as well, if you want to enter the contest for the Matt Merton rubber bands, the not the rubber bands, the wristbands. Once again, the questions were, against which team did Matt Merton get his 1,000th career NPB hit? And that took place in 2015. Also, against which current Hanshin Tiger did he get an MLB, Major League Baseball hit? It was either his first or second career hit in the majors. So those two questions. Send me an email, thehanshintigers@gmail.com. Once again, thehanshintigers@gmail.com. So you can find this podcast as well as extra news articles and more at www.thehanshintigers.com. You can also subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. Just type in the four magic words, Hanshin Tigers English News. Subscribe, write a review, and share with your friends and enemies. Get all the news instantly by following us on Facebook. Just search for Hanshin Tigers English News. Follow T-Ray on Twitter, @TheHanshinTiger. Until next time, keep cheering until the Colonel sets Hanshin free. Have a great week, everyone.